And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Adventures into Sovereignty. You have your co-host, Rebecca Cope, with you here tonight. Andrew Bartzis has been so busy on all of his things with Galactic Extorian that I really urge you to go by and visit his series that he did on Bruce Lee. It's something that you really want to do. He and Tinoch did a recording, The Truth That Bruce Lee Gave His Life to Share with Us. Something that's really, really interesting. I think you'd love to see. Go visit his Galactic Historian and see what he's up to. As we get ready to do this program tonight, I want to just bring you up to date on the Rod Class situation, because I know everybody has just been following this, because we have really exposed the underbelly of our court system by following his DC case. If we had any question in any way, shape, or form that some spellbinding had been cast upon the American public and that we're following this through our court cases, all of those questions have been fully answered and the deepest, darkest, ugliest secrets have been exposed for all time. We'll be bringing you a whole lot more of that as we get into the new year. What we're doing for the next couple of weeks, we have this particular program tonight where we have James Gooden, a veteran from the Tennessee area, who did an interview with us when we were in Denver, North Carolina for the Rod Class seminar. Jamie is a veteran who spent 7 years behind bars for a similar situation that Rod got himself into in the Washington area for a law that he did not break. And as he began to do the research when he got out, the things that he found, the fact that there was not just a mortgage that he had never had on his record, on his credit report, as a result of him being incarcerated. The fact that they took his veteran's pension. He's a disabled veteran. His family did not have the use of that pension while he was incarcerated for those 7 years. So you're going to hear his story tonight, and it's going to start out with a delightful story of how he learned how to stand up to the judges and make sure they didn't take his Christmas money as he had traffic tickets. So you're really going to enjoy this interview. And then next week, I'm going to share the story with you of how my brother and I work together with child support enforcement to begin to uncover all of the deep, dark secrets of child support with the obliger lien, what we learned and how we learned to start standing up to this third-party debt collector that was just pretending to be a public official when they weren't. So that will be the interview for next week. And then we're going to be taking a break before we go into, around Christmas. And then we'll come back with a real good series for you, Uncasting the Spell, that these people, the public officials posing as governments, have put on us. Then in the new year, we want to focus on the ways that we are going to uncast that spell and become individual sovereigns out from under their jurisdiction. That will be the series as we go into the next year. But as we get ready to enjoy this interview tonight, don't forget, if you have questions, visit us at adventuresintosovereignty.org. Sign up for the newsletter. We'll be sending out updates over the next couple of weeks. Or if you have personal questions, or if you wanted to get in touch with Jamie, you can email me at rebecca@humanitad.org. Just remember, we're working with various projects within New Earth Nation and Adventures into Sovereignty as we complete this year and look forward to so many things going on with our lively, lively team as we look forward to next year. And of course, you can always volunteer to help us with activities that are going on as our all-volunteer group with New Earth Nation gets together and does all of the things that we do. And now sit back and enjoy this lovely interview with Jamie Gooden from Tennessee as he and I tell you the story of what he went through and how he learned to stand up to it. It's just a delightful interview. as we look at his understanding of God don't use no smart people. He's quite a delightful interviewee, and I think you'll enjoy this immensely. Sit back and enjoy, and we'll see you again next week.
We want to hear your story. Not only that, we want to present it to the world as someone that said, I'm studying. I'm not going to take this. And I'm saying no, and putting my foot down and helping other people to say no. Thank you.
My uncle had a favorite saying. If people would ask him to let him borrow his car, he would say, not no. But hell no. I don't know if we can say that or not, but we ain't taking
you
that.
You can say any words you want here.
Yeah, we're not taking that anymore.
We do not censor our conversation.
Yeah, I told the judge, it was around about Christmas time when I got those six tickets dismissed.
You guys want some water?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
I got you some water.
And I told him, I said, you're not getting any of my Christmas money this year. He smiled and smirked. I tell you, laugh, but I'm very serious.
Yeah.
And, once I beat those tickets, it was confirmation.
It was confirmation, and that is a very, very hard thing for us to get. And so basically what this conversation is about is that we have absolute proof, and you've brought it right here into this interview, that we have corporations posing as our governments that are not legitimate. And so James has joined me from Tennessee, from the Johnson City, Tennessee area. And what he has brought to the table is absolute information that says, okay, our courts are so corrupt that they are putting people in prison when they have no constitutional or legislative authority to do so. So what is their game? And so what we're all about is exposing what that game is, so that we can start holding these people accountable and say, our people are not going to jail anymore. We're not going to put up with this. So why don't you just start from there and tell us the first thing about this traffic ticket that you shared with me earlier, because you had a win there. You had a really big win because you started out as a veteran, and then you spent 7 years of your life in jail for the type of thing that Rod's talking about right now is this case of a firearm. Mm-hmm. So let's just start. I want to hear the story of the how you beat the traffic tickets, because by this time you've had enough study behind you to where you understand it enough to talk to any judge. But let's start with your history as a veteran, because you have that service, and part of that's going to be a critical part of this story of what you learned when you got sent to prison. So let's start with that.
Well, my name's Jamie Gooden. I grew up in a small town, North Carolina, called Trenton, North Carolina, on the East Coast by Camp Lejeune Marine Base. When I grew up there, there was always something about the law. I think the first instance that I had with him was my brother was on a motorcycle, and he forgot to put his helmet on. And I saw this police officer stop and made him park the bike and then drive home. And, you know, that thing wore on my spirit for a long time, that if this is America, who is it? Who are the law enforcement so-called public safety / state police who can tell somebody to park their car and get out and walk for a country that they paid for with their blood, sweat, and tears?
Yes.
That angered me. For years and years, it just angered me, and I did nothing about it. As I grew up and I left North Carolina and I came to Tennessee, it was always the same question in my mind, even from that time, because I would see so many people get pulled over. I would have to go to traffic court myself and see how people were being talked to, humiliated in front of, you know, the whole courtroom.
Yes.
And even handcuffed and escorted out and told that they couldn't travel on the highways, that they would have to pay taxes and that they would have to pay property taxes. And as I began to read and study, I came to find out that all these things were supposed to be paid for already.
Yes.
I thought that my grandmother and my grandfather had put enough sweat equity into, you know, our family and the United States at the same time, supposedly, for us to be able to live off the land. And as I got to researching in Tennessee, I came across Ron.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to listen to some of the stuff that he was talking about, how this money has always been there from the silver and gold that we had at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And then how the silver.
Yeah. It was conscripted for the war effort. Yeah,
stole from my
sake.
Grandmama, yes. And my granddad.
And conscripted with the idea that they had to pay us because they conscripted it for us, from us. So there is an absolute constitutional foundation that we know that they did conscript this for their war effort, but they had to pay our debts. There was the promise to pay that has never materialized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So as you begin to understand this, then you were in... Tell us a little bit about what you went through as far as the trial or whatever you found that really just set you on this path to study.
Well, I started following the gold and silver. When I read the documents that I had got from Rod that stated that Federal Reserve notes are not money and they're promissory notes, and I started researching, and I found a law called the 1974 Privacy Act.
Mm-hmm.
These agencies would say that I owed them money, and I would get upset because I couldn't fight them. I wasn't an attorney, but I was just a little old man on the totem pole. But we all know God don't use smart people. So, when I read the Judiciary Act dealing with promissory notes, it says the valid debts could only be paid with silver, gold, or discharge.
Yeah,
so
silver,
I
gold,
wrote
or
a,
discharge.
Yeah,
okay.
So my first creditor, I wrote him and I told him, I said, is this a valid debt? Well, of course, they sent me a letter back and said it was a valid debt. And I sent him another letter and I asked them, in what form of currency would they like me to pay them in? And they said, we want Federal Reserve notes. I said, well, dealing with Federal Reserve Act 1913, it's illegal for me to possess because it's not backed by silver or gold. And here comes the fight. So at that time, I was winning cases then. And then for some reason, God had me stopped about four times in the state of Tennessee. And I received my first ticket was a speeding ticket. Second ticket was a speeding ticket. The next one was a camera ticket. And the last one, I think it was a seatbelt violation. And I start going to court and I'm filing this paperwork and I'm asking the judge for his oath of office. I'm asking him for a surety bond. And these judges became very irate with me for asking for their credentials.
Yes.
When they are supposedly ready to display them at a moment's notice, being public figures and want to be fair in the community. Well, I thought it very strange that he wouldn't answer to his oath of office. I thought it very strange that he would get very irate with me when I asked him about his oath of office and his surety bond, just in case I got injured, in this court case.
Yes.
I wanted to be compensated. Well,
and you made it real clear to him you said, I want to be compensated in case I'm injured, so
yes,
that he had a duty to give you that information.
And he denied that duty.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I wasn't as proficient as I am right now in the law to be able to demand those things.
Mm-hmm.
And then after we got through discussing him denying every motion, I began to present to him the evidence that Congress had back in 1861.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him, I said, well, sir, are you my discovery is, are you a bar association member? He said, why, yes, I am. And I told him, I said, well, I don't understand how that could come about, because in 1861, Congress did a investigation on the Bar Association, and they found the Bar Association to be a communist organization, in that the people who would be part of the bar, they wouldn't be loyal to the American people. They would only be loyal to the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And he got very irate. So you saying I'm a
talking with the judge,
just
you don't have the prosecutor.
There's no prosecutor in municipal court.
Okay.
That's got to be illegal within itself.
Yeah.
So
right.
I contacted, Tennessee has a Bureau of Ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Any violations you feel is, outstanding, you can call that agency, mm-hmm. and they'll go to the judge and question him. Mm-hmm. Well, when I wrote the Bureau of Ethics, they started investigating. Of course, they were sending me letters and told me where to go search. So I searched the what every corporation has a charter. Mm-hmm. So when I looked at the charter, it started reading me off all these cases. So I did find a case that said it's the Municipal Court Reform Act. Mm-hmm. Any judge who is a judge, he cannot be an employee of the city and a city judge.
Okay.
In a Municipal Court Reform Act in the state of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. If he does, it violates his code of ethics. Mm-hmm. So I sent that off to the Tennessee Bureau of Ethics. Yeah. I confronted the judge about it. I said, sir, were you a judge in 2005? He said, no. I said, well, are you familiar with the Municipal Court Reform Act of in the state of Tennessee that was recently passed in 2004? He said, yes, I am. I said, well, sir, are you a city employee? He said, well, I get paid by the city. I guess you could say I'm a city. Uh-huh. I said, sir, you're disqualified.
Yeah.
He said, so you're saying I wouldn't be honest in this court case? Okay. He said, well, I'm not going. You're asking me to recuse myself. I said, I most definitely am. He said, well, what's your reason? I said, who's the police officer work for? He works for the city of Johnson City. Mm-hmm. I said, and you work for the city of Johnson City? I said, sir, do you know what that makes me? He said, no, sir. I said, city duck.
Yep.
I mean, he laughed and chuckled. I said, I'm very serious. Mm-hmm. I said, we got a serious conflict of interest here. Yep. Found me guilty in all four ticket charges. At the end of the case, he said, do you have anything left to say? I said, well, sir, yes, sir.
He actually found you guilty, yes, and asked you if you had anything else to say. This is a real big deal that most people don't understand. Is not over until you say it's over.
Right.
You're volunteering if you don't speak up. All right. So what happened next?
And what people really don't understand is they have to find you guilty.
Yes, they have
they
to
don't
find
they
you.
Don't
they
understand
aren't.
Uh-huh. that the
exactly.
judge has to find you guilty.
Yes, yes.
Because he can't set himself up for failure. He would rather let the Court of Appeals come back and overturn it.
Yes.
Or he would rather shift the paperwork.
Yeah.
Now, after my little trial, I told him, I said, well, I'll see you in federal court.
Okay, but now at this point, you told him, okay, after he's already said dismissed, okay, mm-hmm. finish
yeah.
the story.
He
yeah.
said dismissed.
Okay.
And I asked him if I had anything that I wanted to say in the last words, and I told him I'll see him in federal court. Okay. And I began to leave. He said, federal court, what for? You just violated my civil rights. And I said, you not only violated the 1964 Civil Rights Act of a federally assisted program, namely the Highway Traffic Safety Act, because okay. you don't issue driver's license and you can't take them.
Right.
And so I said, well, I'll just see you there because I've laid out mine for me. I asked for discovery. I didn't get the Chris reports. I had to go and get them on my own. And I said, and you haven't answered me on the to each political subdivision. He said, so you think I'm embezzling money? I said, sir, I said, under the Highway Traffic Safety Act, 40% of all ticket money collected in the state of Tennessee, namely Johnson City, must be given to each political subdivision. I mean, fire departments. I said, we shouldn't have a volunteer fire department here at all because this money is supposed to go there. He said, well, you saying I'm embezzling? I'm saying we got a conflict of interest. I can't find that money. I don't know if you've got it in your pocket. So who do I trust?
Yeah.
God, my religion tells me not to trust no man. Because if any man cannot answer to his oath of office,
yeah.
I'm afraid of him already.
Yes,
and
he's not willing to stand up. Wow. Okay.
So at that point in time, I turned around and left. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, I filed no appeal.
Right.
I filed no more paperwork after that point in time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just waiting to see what he did.
Okay.
3 months go by, I go to the Department of Motor Vehicles and pull my driving record.
Yeah.
Clean as a baby's butt. Not a ticket.
Not a ticket.
I got the tickets to prove it. 6 months later, I go back and I pull it again. Not a ticket. Not
okay.
one ticket. So I left it alone. A year go by, and I pull it up. No ticket.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, I'm done. Well, God had a different plan. At that point in time, I got a daughter. She's 26 years old. I got a letter in the mail from child support. Sent me a letter, told them I owe them $6,000 and that my wife was suing me for $6,000. Mm-hmm. Well, at that point in time, I called my wife and I said, well, you filed child support on me? She said, I didn't file anything. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a letter to child support and I asked them, I said, well, are you saying that I owe you some Federal Reserve notes? In what form would you like that in? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So they wrote me back, never wrote back.
Never wrote you back.
So the sheriff comes to the house to give me a presentment or an affidavit or a summons to come to court. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'm not signing that. He said, why don't you want to sign? I said, it's not me. He said, that's you. That's your picture right there. I said, that don't mean a thing. I'm telling you that that's not me. Yeah. He gets on the radio. He calls his sergeant. Here comes another police car. He said, not you. I said, I'll sign it. Just said, I wrote on there under duress, yes. Under threat, coercion, duress, mm-hmm. refused to sign. He said, you just altered a court document. I said, what court was that? He said, state of Tennessee court. I said, prove it exists.
Yes.
He said, you've been in trouble for it. I said, that's none of your business. I said, the business of the day is that you came and you disrupted my time, had me sitting here for 30 minutes when I could have been making some money somewhere, and you're holding me up. So now, am I under arrest? Are you detaining me? Because if you are, I need to be compensated. You go ahead, Lee. He jumped in his car and he left. Mm-hmm. So I go to court to show up and tell the judge. Mm-hmm. And I walk up and he calls the name. I said, sir, I'm here concerning that matter. He said, well, are you Jamie Gooden or not? I said, which one would you like to talk to? Jamie Gooden, the transferee, Jamie Gooden, transferer, the secure party, the debtor. Which one are you want to talk to today? I said, yeah, I told you one time to remove my name from that court docket. Yeah. He said, well, see the general.
See the general?
Yeah, the general is what he calls in Tennessee the prosecutor.
Okay.
He didn't even fight me.
Oh, okay.
He didn't even fight me in front of all those people who were listening
right.
to what I had to yeah. say. So at that point in time, we go through child support. Now child support is taking my license. So I've got recently got a ticket in Damascus, Virginia, and I got one in Johnson City that I'm fighting right now. I'm on appeal. I go in August the 1st on my appeal, mm-hmm. And I started working on all those cases. But as I told you earlier, I went to federal prison for mm-hmm. possession of a handgun mm-hmm. in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. I was prosecuted in Greenville, Tennessee. Which is the Eastern District of the federal court system.
Okay.
Okay. They came with an indictment in 2002. I had a paid attorney, mm-hmm. and we went to trial. The paid attorney basically just handed me to him on a silver platter.
Yes, yes, yes. Didn't give you any defense, didn't do anything but railroad you, basically. Just tell the truth about it, you know? Yeah.
We met 1 hour.
Yeah.
In the afternoon before court mm-hmm. the next day.
And you had a paid attorney. You're not talking about public defender. Yeah. You're talking about a paid attorney who sold you out.
Handed it me to him on a silver platter.
Yep.
Made me sign all kinds.
And this was before you really started into the study of law that we've been talking about over these last few minutes, okay? Mm-hmm. All right, so you were dealing with this attorney in 2002.
Yep. I went to court in September 2002. Went to trial. Took it to trial.
Yeah.
While I was there, I keep remembering one thing. There was two things that really stood out. The judge told the jury that you don't listen to the law from nobody else. You listen to the law as I. The second thing is my attorney was sitting at the table with me, and the prosecutor walks over to me with this paper, and it says that I agree that I was operating in interstate commerce.
Okay.
And I signed that paper.
You didn't know at that particular point in time.
Didn't know what it meant from Adam.
Now, were you in a car when you were?
No, I was out.
Okay, so these people have absolutely set you up mm-hmm. at this particular point in time by getting you to sign that document that says you're in interstate commerce.
And I was operating in interstate commerce at the time of the incident.
Okay.
And to come to find out is a lot of people do not understand, especially I understand that more dealing with these driving and speeding tickets.
Yeah.
Because the court can only prosecute you for operating in commerce.
In commerce. And that's where that's where all the War Powers Act and the license and registration comes in.
Yes.
This is how they're getting us in under criminal charges.
Yes.
And so now we're really beginning to understand more about how they're getting us and bringing us in. But at that point in time, of course, you would not have had any way of knowing what was going on. Okay.
So God is still pushing me in the law.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be in law because at the beginning I said, these people got all the guns.
Yeah.
And I have no defense whatsoever. So, but God began to show me over the years how he has protected me and kept me, even through federal prison. And I started to back out. And he said, do you remember at that point in time when I had you in this prison and that you should have been dead on several instances and I protected you? So I said, okay, all right, God, whatever you want to do. So now, getting back into the fight, I'm seeing that these judges are becoming to get more and more crafty.
Yes, yes.
As you go along.
Yes.
They just go right around you, and they don't listen to anything that you have to say.
Yes.
So as I'm going back to court on this gun charge and finding out who these people really are, I sent several letters to the Secretary of State, asking who the United States of America was.
Now, wait a minute. Are you doing this while you were in prison?
Or no, when I get out.
When you get out.
I didn't know to do it. We don't have the resources in prison that we have outside.
Right.
And it's really a shame because you don't know who you're dealing with.
You have all the time, and you would have been able to if you'd had. Okay.
Right.
All right. As
I wrote the Secretary of State to find out United States of America Corporation, this is the first letter. Mm-hmm. I'm asking for their certificate of corporation in the state of Tennessee. Can they do business there?
Mm-hmm.
This is the first letter I got back, and it says the corporation, for-profit domestic corporation. Says United States of America, Inc., United States of America, Incorporated, inactive, dissolved administratively. So I began to ask the lady, go ahead.
Yeah, what made you, here you were 7 years in prison, what made you start really wanting to know the truth? I mean, let's get back to the heart of what made you determine that you were going to find out who was holding, you know, who was putting you in jail and doing all of this stuff. What brought you to that place?
Well, you know, I explained to you, I'm a veteran United States Air Force.
Yes.
I was security police while I was in the Air Force. And we were taught the Constitution.
Yes.
When we went in
you
there.
Knew the Constitution, yes. And you knew it, you had had violation after violation to be in there in the first place. You know, the lawyer had run over you. You'd signed this paper. Okay. So you knew something was wrong. Okay.
Well, when somebody puts handcuffs on you.
Yes. Yes.
You get this emotional sense of being so frustrated.
Yes.
Frustration and humiliation hit you at the same time.
Yeah.
And
unfairness. You've got to feel unfairness because it's such a, you know, such a small thing that you're going to be spending 7 years of your life locked away.
Yes, yes, yes. And you know.
For a right, when you really get right down to it, it is a right
constitutionally
that we have
secured
by the Constitution.
Yes.
And you serve those years under a security force for your government.
Yes, yes. Now I can understand. If I were violent,
or if
someone had actually gotten injured.
Yes, yes. If you had an injured party and there was no injured party, it was just a dumb luck at that particular point in time. Yeah.
So that's really what angered me.
Yeah.
But the thing that intrigued me the most after my anger, you know, the peace of God came over me and I knew right then that he was doing something.
Yeah.
In my life.
Yeah.
When that piece hit me in that courtroom that day, I knew I was okay.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. I knew that I was going to have to face them, but I knew that in the end, it was going to be okay.
Yeah.
So after that piece came, I watched this movie called The Wizard of Oz.
What made you watch that movie?
I you know, we're in prison. We got to watch something, and it's there.
The
you know
what?
Yeah. And as a kid, I remember watching it.
Yeah.
And you know what? I was going to get up and walk out, but something just told me to sit down and watch it.
Okay.
And as I watched it, you know, that night when I was in bed, I was thinking, I said, what's the biggest thing that stuck out to you?
Mm-hmm.
There was two things in the movie that stuck out to me. And the one is where the wizard was yelling and screaming and hollering.
Yes.
And that's really stuck out to me.
Yeah.
Because here this little poor innocent child was trying to get home, and and he's selling her wolf tickets.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
The second thing was, is that when the curtain came back.
Yes.
And she said, who are you?
Yeah.
And that thing stuck out to me really good.
Who are you? What a question.
Are you? And at the end of her, who are you? She said, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Because even if you couldn't give me what I asked for, but you told people that you could.
Yeah.
And we've traveled all this way to get nothing.
To get nothing. Oh, goodness.
Ain't that something?
Yeah.
So the first question that I learned to ask was who these people were.
Who are you?
And when I found out who they were, now I want you to look at this paper right here, and I want you to see what they did. They say United States of America.
United States of America.
United Services of America.
Yep.
But look down here at the bottom. It says United
United Check Advance.
Yep. United Check Advance. Yeah, a government. To a corporation who's changed their name to a money laundering scheme.
To a money laundering scheme, and it's there in your paper.
It's right here. I didn't make this up. Now, if you take $20, it's from the Secretary of State.
The Tennessee Secretary of State. Yep.
Trey Hargan. Yeah. He's still the Secretary of State, and I sent this to his office. They charged me $20 to get this paper. But I had to get four of them. I wanted to make sure that I was spelling United States right, whether it was United States Incorporated, United States Limited Liability Corporation, United States Corp. I sent $80 to find out who these people, and each one came back says undeliverable, administratively dissolved. Now, this is not the first time that their names has been changed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since they came back with United Services of America, that's been administratively dissolved.
And now they
came right back and picked up that same name again.
Yeah, so you've
now, I don't know how in the world that could happen. It's got to be some kind of fraud.
Yes.
But here it is in black and white. They're back in business.
Yep.
Now, I wish I would have bought my letter, my envelope.
Yeah.
Each corporation is required by law to have a resident agent.
Yes, each corporation has it. Got it.
Trusted agent.
Yes.
Yes.
That would be the agent who's paying the bills.
Yep.
And taking care of all the paperwork. Mm-hmm. When I sent that letter to the registered agent, it had a post office box. As you can see, this is the address for the United States of America.
Okay, and where is
APO 40 bypass.
Okay.
And this is usually called an Army or Air Force post office.
Okay.
It's located on some
APO,
military
right.
installation.
Uh-huh. Okay.
A corporation.
Yes.
In America.
Yeah.
Located on an installation. It came back undeliverable. There's nobody home.
There's nobody home.
So now when a Darth is saying, who are you?
Who are you?
We got the evidence of who they really are.
Right.
Now, I don't think people really understand the gist of this. After 1933, America went bankrupt and they couldn't pay their bills. Yeah. They had to make a deal with somebody for money.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
And they made that deal. And what they did was basically hand America over to them.
To the people who were the fiduciaries for the bankruptcy. In other words, here we went bankrupt. And so the problem was then that somebody had to administer that bankruptcy. And so the corporations posing as governments got their toehold at that point in time. But we were never told because we came under that amendatory act, under the State Secrets Act.
Mm-hmm.
They said, well, if it's a state secret, we don't have to tell you who we are. So when you start asking the question, who we are, there's nobody home.
Yeah. Nobody.
There's nobody home. So, okay, tell me the next part that you went to at this point in time, because, boy, this is really quite a story.
I mean, it's getting
as
deep.
As you started doing the investigation that would get this down. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, after the sending of letter to the registered resident agent of that corporation, yeah. It coming back being undeliverable. Now, what people don't understand is that makes you a first-hand material fact witness.
That's exactly right.
Now, my strategy is to take these people to court.
Yes.
Okay. Now, as I told you, I was a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
There's a public slip law called 105-107,
mm-hmm.
that when a veteran is incarcerated, 61st day, his check is stopped.
Yes. Okay?
So I spent 87 months. I'm a 100% disabled veteran. I get $3,225 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For those 87 months, the VA requires that the incarcerating institution must send the VA a letter stating that that veteran is incarcerated, mm-hmm. before they can stop that check.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sending a letter right now to the VA, mm-hmm. and asking them, who was the incarcerating institution?
Mm-hmm.
Either it's got to be the United States of America,
mm-hmm.
or it's got to be the United Services of America.
Yes, United Services of America, which plain and simple is a corporation standing in as if it is the United States of America Incorporated.
Right. But
which is not the United States government that we think we are operating under. And, you know, that's the thing that we've got to be very clear. We're not dealing with a legitimate government.
Well, here's how they cannot get out of it.
Yes.
When I send them the letter and ask them for the certificate of incarceration,
right.
which the VA, the Department of Veteran Affairs, had to have,
yeah.
in order to stop that check, it's going to tell me who it was.
Yes.
Now, once it tells me who it was, it's either got to be United States of America or the United Services of America.
Yeah.
But even at point, both of these corporations have been dissolved.
Yes. And
you follow me?
Yes, I do.
So if they
yes.
have been dissolved, the VA has made a fatal error.
Yeah.
Now, the VA has to be sued because they don't have a proper certificate
right.
from an alive corporation.
Yes.
That is going to put the nail in the coffin with these guys.
Okay, but they took your $3,000. You never saw it. Your family never saw it. There was no income coming in.
No.
But somebody took that.
The
money.
VA stopped it because one of these
okay.
organizations
okay.
said, hey, we're alive. We're a corporation.
Right.
Well, Trey Hargett said you're dead.
Yeah. Right.
And if Trey Hargett says you're dead, VA got to come off my money, number
yes.
one.
Yes.
And these guys have got to be brought to justice
yes.
for
agreed.
For sending federal papers,
yes.
Fraudulent papers
yeah.
to a federal institution, namely the VA,
mm-hmm.
for incarceration.
Because what they're doing at this point in time, and this is the point that if we can really get people in this country to understand what's going on through the War Powers Act, what we are doing is standing in for the perpetual war that has been declared, and it seems to me the perpetual war has been declared against the people of the United States and against the people of the world, because our country is constantly going to war all over the place with everybody else. Now, because our property was conscripted and they're supposed to pay our debts, you know, they're obviously, here's $3,000 disappearing down this rabbit hole that is not coming from VA, is not coming from the services or anything like that. But what it's doing at this particular point in time is being taken, robbed from you, and as an enemy of the state, because we know that has come back in at this particular point in time. Then wait a minute here. You know, how are you declared an enemy of the state when you served your country as a veteran for all of those years? And so who is accusing you of being an enemy of the state? It's not the government. It's not the legitimate United States government.
But let me give you something before I forget it.
Okay.
I know you heard me earlier when I was telling you about when I got out of federal prison, I pulled my credit report.
Yes, and there was a mortgage. A mortgage
and
now. But you didn't have a house.
Never
you
owned a house
a
in my life.
You never owned a house.
But there was a mortgage on my credit report.
There was a mortgage on it, okay?
And I called the mortgage company and had to go round and round with them until I got the answer that I needed to call the district court in Greenville and talk to them about that mortgage being on my credit report. Now remember what you just said. Everything that we own belongs to who?
Belongs to basically the United States government sold us out as the full faith and credit to solve the bankruptcy of this United States. They didn't tell us that we were going to be used as collateral for the war.
But let me ask you something.
Okay.
If you had my stuff in your possession,
yeah,
I've got maybe 4 or 5 acres of property. I've got maybe 4 or 5 cars and trucks that I use in my business. Mm-hmm. I've got unlimited amount of tools. I say I'm worth about $250,000 if I would liquidate.
Yes.
If you had all that stuff in your possession, could you go to a bank and borrow money?
Yeah.
What about the United States? What about the state of Tennessee who has our land, who has all of our jewelry,
who owns all of
our cars? They're robbing us.
They're robbing us, and here you've got proof, because while you were incarcerated, you've got this mortgage that is put on a property that you don't own. They're saying that you own something. What are they saying?
They're saying that they own it, and I'm just the worker. I'm the employee taking care of all of their assets.
Exactly.
I mean, basically, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So
you have the absolute proof.
Yeah, I've sent letters to the Department of Justice, Department of Office and Budget, who's required to keep the oath of offices for judges. The responses that I've gotten back, let me read you this. Please be advised that while we did not locate Senate commission for Judge Greer, or the oath of office appointment affidavit for Judge Jordan, that does not mean that these documents do not exist, nor does it mean that these judges are not duly authorized.
Okay.
But the law says if you're a judge, you need a confirmation, presidential, judicial, and an omnibus control number like every other corporation in the world.
Exactly.
But these judges don't have it.
Yeah.
But they're saying just because our law is, you know, it says that, it doesn't mean we
got
to abide by it.
It doesn't mean you got to abide by it. So here again is proof that we're being brought in as war criminals with no rights and no remedy. Because basically what they're saying is, we don't have to abide by anything. You know, just because you bring us a law that says you're supposed to do this, well, we're putting our name on this that says we don't care about your laws.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Another thing, I asked for... the grand jury magistrate who issued the indictment.
Yes.
And he's not even an attorney.
He's not even an attorney.
But he has to be. I asked for the attorney general's, not the prosecutor, which they're called in the federal government something different, his credentials.
Right. Didn't have credentials there either.
No credential. So I'm saying, okay. And then I read this little excerpt, It says that we are living under a de facto government. And I began to really understand what that means.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the government.
Yeah, it's not the government.
It's something that they implemented while we were asleep. Now, remember what happened at the end of Dorothy when she woke up?
Yeah.
She said, I was trying to get home.
Yes, trying to get home.
She said, honey, you were already home.
Yeah.
But you just fell and bumped your head. So America has a lot of knots on their head.
Yes.
But God is waking America up.
Yes.
Because the Bible says in the last days, knowledge shall increase. People are getting that knowledge that they need.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're here in Denver to learn how to use the knowledge that we have so that we can stop the corruption.
Yeah.
But I want people to understand, there's a price.
Yes, there is a price. Yes,
and you have to remember, I get excited when I go into these courtrooms. Mm-hmm. I really do. And I really have to learn to tone it down, because I quote stuff like the Bar Association being communist, and that's not the venue for that play. The venue is, here are your rules.
Yes, here are your rules.
Here's your law.
You've broken them.
Are you going to follow them or not?
Yes.
Because if you're not going to abide by your oath, then I've got to get an indictment for you for impersonating a judge or a public official.
Impersonating a public official.
A real judge wouldn't have a problem showing me his oath of office, his surety bond, and listening to a case, mediating a case without conflict.
Yes. And so where's the conflict? You've just proven that there is conflict because you've got $3,000 per month times 87 months missing. It's not there, and there is a very, very good chance that there has been a double dipping take place because the whoever this is had to go back through the federal funding side and ask for that money twice. So you've got that, and now you've got a mortgage that this court put on you, not expecting you to go do your homework and find this on your credit report. Now, you own a construction company, so you're used to being a business person. And so you're used to knowing what a credit report is and how to run a business and all of this kind of thing. And they're basically treating all of us as so dumbed down that we're not supposed to ask the question, who are you? We're not supposed to follow this yellow brick road and find out who is taking all this money and everything. But you're exactly right. We're waking up, and we are asking these questions. So you've got the investigative evidence at this particular point in time that proves the absolute corruption of the court. But you gave 7 years of your life for this. So what you have done is get in there kicking and screaming a lot of times. I understand that 100% because that's exactly where I've come from, you know. It's not always fun. First of all, it's not always fun when I'm finding out that my government is not who I think my government is. You know, I have been very disappointed as I've had to understand what I'm dealing with, and I'm looked at it sometimes and I'm saying, no, you know, what am I finding here? So you had to have felt this as you were going through all of this. It's like, what do you do? You know, what do you do? So you're in here coming to the Rod Class Seminar determined that you're going to be able to file the Title 42 tort claim because you've got the investigative evidence done, and that is the next step at this point in time. What made you get the fortitude that says, you know, I'm not going to let them get away with this?
You know, coming up, my mother's black and my father's an Indian.
Okay.
But if you have any color in your skin coming up in the South, you're always going to be on the bottom of the food chain.
And there's just no way around it.
It's
ingrained in our Southern culture, and I don't care how much you think that we get away from that. None of us ever do.
You never go away.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
We came up eating pork and you name it. Half my family's got high blood pressure / stroke. And we came up very poor.
Yeah.
I mean, kids at a young age, they are ruthless.
Yeah.
It's hard to have tennis shoes, we have good clothing. And you remember that stuff.
Yes.
We've had land taken away from us. There's so many things taken that I think God is saying right now, you know, enough is enough.
Enough is enough.
And for me, enough is enough. It's when I start going through 7 years of federal prison over something that was not even illegal.
Illegal in the first place.
Now, this is just my story.
Yeah, I know.
How many stories do you think the Creator has heard? How many stories do you think God has seen? How his people have been mistreated.
Yeah.
There's something in you that has to get angry.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I'm beyond angry, furious.
You get to the point where you can't ignore it any longer.
No.
You just can't ignore it any longer. And so you want to do it from a place of peace as much as you can because it doesn't do any good You know, but you can't just, you can't live with yourself when it gets to this place. There's something in you that won't allow this to go on without finding a way to do something about it.
Yeah, but the thing that made me the most angry, I fought for my country.
Yes, I can imagine.
How many veterans are in the graveyard for fighting for their country that was robbed, just like I'm being robbed?
Just like you're being robbed right now.
And their families going without food.
Yes.
Children, grandchildren, who they loved before they left this earth and who they fought to have a place where they can come and not be mistreated when they go to a courtroom.
Yes.
Or a prosecutor who's being unfair and unjust and not going to follow his own policy. Mm-hmm. How many of you think in that graveyard that if they could get out right now, wouldn't take arms against this de facto corporation?
De facto corporation. Now, let's not even call it a government, because it's not a government. It is a de facto corporation posing as a government.
Yes.
And that is what we are finding out, and what we're finding out, that's what we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. We're not dealing with a legitimate government in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. But you know, one of the things that I'd like to implement here and just let you know that you can't tell everybody this stuff.
Yes. Very
because true. They're not going to hear.
Yeah.
If you sit there and you can show them firsthand evidence and facts, they would rather just pay the ticket, go on by to do their time, and leave it alone.
Yeah.
Because it's been instilled in their minds, I fought the law, and the law won.
Yes. So, that's brainwashed in us.
Yes. And I'm not mad at them, because until something happens to maybe a family member or something that happens to them,
yes,
they're not going to get angry.
Yeah.
And a person who's not angry, he's going to keep taking it.
Yeah.
He's going to lay there and he's going to like it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I had time with you today and was able to get my story to somebody who needs to hear that. They need to know who these people are.
They need to know who the people are. That's for sure.
And to know that they need to get angry.
Mm-hmm.
Until they get angry, they're not going to do anything about it.
So if you have somebody who's really, really at the place where, you know, they've been through prison and they know that they, you know, instead of being hopeless, what would you give them as the most important advice you could give them as far as how to start doing the evidence trail, so that they know who are we? You know, watch, you know, go watch some of these movies like Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, and get the understanding, because there's a whole lot more in that movie. And some of it's going to be posted on the websites that we're all dealing with, because the Wizard of Oz is talking about the straw man and the tin man and the yellow brick road, because this yellow brick road looking for the money trail, if you can understand how money is created from your value, how you have been the, you've given up all of your property, they've conscripted it for the war effort, and then they have turned it through the Social Security Act into the funding that somebody is stealing, but you never get any of that.
Mm-hmm. Now remember, in Wizard of Oz, they were able to walk right on their gold.
Yes.
But they couldn't take a brick.
Couldn't take a brick, yep.
The thing that really made me angry, if somebody said to me one time, if you ever want to hide anything from a black man, put it in a book.
Yeah.
If you don't read, you ain't angry. I failed English 2 times.
Yeah.
I had to go from the junior high to senior high school, in that, because 7 through 9 was at junior high, and 10 through 12 is at senior high. I failed English in the 9th grade, and I had to ride, they promoted me onto the 10th grade, but I had to ride the little yellow bus in the evening back to the Jones Junior High School to take that English that I failed. Makes no difference whether you can read or write. I'm here today because I put a foot forward and God helped me.
Yeah.
If you don't get angry, Lord ain't gonna help you. And you need him in this fight. I've seen people die from just the stress of being denied.
I mean, look, I got a cabinet.
And a house that stands 4 foot tall.
Most of us do.
Full of denial.
Yes.
The Bible says it's the race is not given to the swift. Or the strong. If you could keep your cool and fight these jokers, no matter how long it takes, the reward is under your feet.
And the perseverance is the key. You know, if you just, if you go through the first traffic ticket and you bomb out or whatever, or you go through all of this stuff, you have to take the time to learn it. And it does, you know, there's a lot of study that has to go with it. But it's not complicated. And then at this point in time, I can see your determination. I can see your will. And I can see your intent. And that's what it's going to take for more of us to understand what's going on in this country so that we can do our part to make sure that we have the kind of governance that is of, by, and for the people. Because right now, we've let a corporation take over our country, and we don't have any say. Well, it's our fault because it's our country, and it's our job to do something about it. And I just appreciate what you've shared, you know, as we really come together in this fight, and we come together from all different organizations from everywhere. It doesn't matter where we're coming from, as long as we learn to work together and share this information. And that's what, like Rod Class's organization, I've been working with Christina with the foreclosure network, the networks that have come together and shared across all these boundary lines. And so what we're doing at this point in time is creating that unstoppable force that's going to help each other. Every which way, and you're doing this in Tennessee, you're working with your local communities, and you're helping spread this information. So as we learn to work together and do things like sharing these interviews and really getting our stories down, you know, people have to hear your sincerity. They have to hear your heart. And it's not vengeance that you're working at here. It's justice. It's justness, because you have been abused and you're not willing just to sit there and take it. You have to do what is required.
Well, you know, the one thing that I'm thinking about is not me.
Yes, I've got
children coming after me.
Exactly.
And I've got people who are going to be, you know, in heaven with me.
Yes.
I have to make sure that I do them justice by sharing what I have so that they could have a happier life here.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you've ever been to Atlanta or not, but they've got a bus stop down there full of homeless people living in cardboard boxes.
Yes.
And my heart goes out to veterans who live in cardboard boxes.
Yeah.
Because their money has been stolen by this corporation.
Yes.
That's a very serious issue for me.
It is a very serious, and it should be a very serious issue for all of us, that there is one homeless person in this country when we have such countless resources that have been taken from us.
Yes.
That have been taken from us. And, you know, there's just a growing group of us that's willing to say no more.
No more. Yeah. And God is raising those up even as we speak.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you now, I'm praying every day that he sends me those people who are not cowards or who are ready to die for whatever it is that they're going to get out of what they do, whether it is the reward that comes from heaven or whether it is the reward to see their children being able to progress and being able to go to school with shoes on their feet and have food in their mouth and not live in a cardboard pot. Whatever the situation is, I'm praying to God that he'll send me a team.
Yes.
That like an army that'll go out there and face these criminals, because there's no other way to say it.
There is no other way to say it.
I call it crooks putting crooks in jail, but they're crooks.
Yeah.
And they look at you. They had this one saying when I was doing my research in prison. I was reading what they call the Jesuit order. I'm not going to get into it, but here's what the order said. The order said, the end justifies the means.
Yeah.
And what that means is, we're here to keep peace, and we think that we're doing the right thing. And if we weren't here, there'd be so much chaos and confusion. But God told it to me like this one day. He says, you have a job, talking towards me. He said, the police have a job. If they would leave the rest of that stuff to me instead of making all these crooked laws, the world would be a lot better. But they trust in their laws, and they don't trust in him.
Yeah.
So each time something happens, they say, oh, we're going to trust God. We can just make another law.
Mm-hmm.
Well, God said this in the Bible. He said, you Pharisees and you Sadducees, you make all these laws, but you yourself can't even keep
them. Yes. It comes down to what's in your heart. It comes down to what's in your heart. And if you don't know the difference between what's right and what's wrong in your heart, then, and that's where people have got to stop. Because when they say, oh, somebody did something, they broke a law, you know. I have so many people who say, but, you know, you've got to obey the laws. Well, there are so many laws that you can't obey them. And, you know, if you really, the Bible only has two laws that you're supposed to keep. And that's love the Lord thy God with all your heart and love thy neighbor as thyself. Those are the only two laws. And that's simple enough. And if you get, this is what to me sovereign consciousness is all about. When we get to the place where we can understand that in our hearts and live from it, then we don't have to have all these ridiculous laws. And that's where we need to be. And that's where we're going as a society. And part of what we have to do in order to get there is just to simply say no to all of these laws that have been created that aren't really laws. All right. Well, goodness gracious, what a story here. And I just so appreciate you taking the time to share it. And as we come together with Rod's program here, we're going to get a lot of this information. And I want to be sure that we all stay in touch as we do this so that we can share our successes, our paperwork. You know, this has been one of the biggest parts for me with Rod's material, as we've learned together. You know, we meet on our AIB radios and, you know, what we do this way. And we share his paperwork and we read it. And my God, what I've learned from him, you know.
Well, I'll be glad to see you when you come to Tennessee and interview some more people so you can hear some of the stories about how they were treated while they were in this corporate government and see and just look at how the families were left when their men were hauled off to prison or their daughter left a child or something like that. And you hear these heart-wrenching stories of how this is just not North Carolina. It's not Florida.
No.
It's worldwide.
It's worldwide. And it is worldwide. But this corporation has been traced now to the top of the chain. Internationally, we know it's the city of London and the city of Rome and the city of Washington. But the city of Washington has nothing to do with the government. It has nothing to do with that. And that's really what we're learning. Mm-hmm. And part of what we're doing as we share a lot of these stories.
Well, I've really got to go. I appreciate you. I enjoyed you, but I'm looking forward to you coming to Tennessee.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We'll keep in touch.
I would love a hug. Very, very good. Thank you so much. Absolutely.
Well, God bless you. You keep doing what God's called you to do here. You know what?
Absolutely. Oh, yes.
Somebody needs. See, it's stories like this that'll make other people mad.
Yeah, that make other people understand it and do that. That's for
sure. And once they go and start researching like me, then they can see it for themselves.
Yeah, they do. All right, we'll be here later then.
All right.